our fantastic staff. Thank you so much for this recognition. It's an honor to be doing the service that we love, and it's great to get recognition for it. Thank you.
On behalf of Valley Mountain Regional Center, thank you for this recognition. And truly what we do is a big collaborative partnership with all of the agencies that are mentioned and everyone that stood up. So thank you guys for everything that you do on behalf of the social workers everywhere. So thank you.
On behalf of myself and my colleagues, we thank you all. This is a public comment period. If anyone would like to speak to the board, I have a couple of people this morning. I have Sally Schroeder.
I'm Sally Schroeder. I live in Morningside Mobile Home Park. It's a county park. I request the following be submitted for the record. For the past 2 years, myself and other advocates have represented all park owners throughout the county. We have provided this board with documentation of unjustifiable space rent increases. Recently, we began furnishing with facts on the infrastructures being ignored until the parks are no longer safe. Park owners and managers harass the evicted residents who attempt to speak out against the abuses. The residents live in fear and will tolerate deplorable conditions in order to remain their homes. Many of those residents wrote confidential letters and testified before this board last year, well aware of the risk they were taking, knowing that park owners and managers were likely to be there. Did you even read those letters or listen to those testimonies? Or did you simply dismiss them as insignificant? For the first time, I'm testifying as an individual homeowner about my park. It's up close and personal, so please bear with me. This testimony should not be dismissed as no big deal because it only involves one small park. The owner of Morningside and his brother own other parks in the county, along with many other park owners with the same mentality. The business practices they use are commonplace. You then provide the pictures all taken in Morningside. But the frustration, the fear, the heartache, and the sheer desperation can't be put in a photo. Mobile home residency laws are ignored and residents' rights be damned. Property is illegally confiscated from the 16 occupied home sites in order to accommodate the new, larger, modular homes, simply by arbitrarily moving lot lines. The existing homeowners' investment for landscaping, sprinkler systems, everything is destroyed in the process. This violation can only be reported by the affected resident, and that doesn't happen. They may not know the law, but most often they have accepted that nothing will be done, so why risk the repercussions? Often the new home setup doesn't comply with the legal requirement of being 3 feet fence line, necessary for emergency equipment and personnel. New units are illegally set over old septic tanks. HCB stated they don't like to do anything about it because it will put the new homeowner at risk. One mobile home burned down after the owner had to cancel her insurance to pay the increase in rent. When we received our third large rent increase in 18 months, a man called the office to say there was no way he could pay that much. He was told his place was worthless, walk away and they'd take care of it. He tried to commit suicide. When one lady received the illegal notice stating that if we sold our mobile home, it had to be removed from the park, she told her neighbor friend that she was counting on the sale to provide the money needed for a group therapy to bury her. She was hospitalized and died shortly later. Coincidence? Because of the large rent increases every 6 months, a friend's family insisted she sell her mobile home a year after she invested in new siding, dual pane windows, and new landscaping. She gave in after damage was done when a new unit was crammed illegally onto the lot next to her. She sold her home for a fraction of its value. The Advocate Homeless Lady logo is in memory of a dear friend who kept being hospitalized after she received her eviction notice. Her church finally found her a new place 3 days before the marshal was due. She died less than a year later. My closest friend stayed longer than she should have. Other residents donated monthly towards her rent so that she could have surgery and cancer treatment. She now lives alone in another state refusing further treatment. She tells me, why bother? Excuse me. I haven't risked giving this testimony attempt to gain your pity. That's not my makeup. Your parts are called communist communes. What happened to equal protection under the law and common decency? Until 2 years ago, you may not have known what was happening, but you can't claim that anymore. You know, as a local government, only you can put an end to this. It's already too late for so many of us, not just in my park. It'll only get worse. Will you please set aside your fears and prejudice and propaganda of the property industry and others saying that it will include all rental property? If that hasn't happened in other jurisdictions where it was enacted over 20 years ago, why would it happen here? Please gather your courage and enact rent stabilization before it's too late to make any difference. Thank you.
Thank you. Chet, happy June.
Pardon? What? Oh, that's on B4, okay.
Okay. Is there anyone else? Seeing no other, we go back to the consent calendar. We're going to pull C3, bring it back to... Okay.
I move for approval of the balance.
I have a motion.
Second.
Okay. Bill, I'll...
Second.
Bill, okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. We have a 9:15 public hearing this morning. Public hearing to consider the formation of the Salida Boulevard Landscape and Lighting District Salida area and conduct a ballot procedure and levy of the annual assessment in compliance with Proposition 218. I'm going to open the public hearing. You want to talk about it first.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Short presentation, Chairman Mayfield. Good morning, Chairman Mayfield, Board of Supervisors. I'm David Dine, and I'm with Stanislaus County Public Works Department. As stated, this is a public hearing regarding the formation of the Salida Boulevard Landscape and Lighting District, which was initiated in order to provide continued maintenance services for 215,000 square feet of landscaping that is planned to be installed as part of the Salida Boulevard Improvement Project. The project is intended to enhance the aesthetics of the area and make it more attractive for businesses and the residents of Salida. The required ballot procedure for formation of the Salida Boulevard Landscaping and Lighting District is in compliance with Proposition 218. If there is anyone who is here today to submit a ballot, they should do so at this point by giving the ballot to the clerk of the board, Christine Farrar. She's right over here. The deadline to change a ballot is at the end of this public hearing. If there is anyone here today that needs to change a ballot, please proceed immediately to the table in the back, and my colleague, Norma Canopy, will assist you. Chairman Mayfield, do you or the members of the board have any questions before you open the public hearing regarding the formation of this district?
You on the board? See no one? No. Okay, now open the public hearing. Does anybody have any ballots they'd like to bring up? Seeing no one, okay. Okay, I'll bring it back to the board then.
Chairman Mayfield, the ballots will be tabulated tomorrow at 2 p.m. in the clerk of the board's offices, and the results of the tabulation will be presented to the board on March 18th.
Okay. Okay, with that, we go down to...
Yes, the board has three staff recommendations.
Well, even without the ballot.
Yes.
Okay. I'll move approval of the three staff recommendations. Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, move the second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you. We'll go down now to B4.
Good morning, gentlemen. My name is Madeline Schleffer, and I am the Associate Director of Behavioral Health and Recovery Services. We're here this morning to provide you an update on the relocation of several of our services of our programs that serve adults and two other groups that have to do with consumer and family member advocacy. I'd like to introduce Adrian Carroll. He is our chief of the old, of our adult system of care and our older adult system of care, and he will be doing a short PowerPoint presentation, and then we will answer any questions that you might have.
Good morning. I'm Adrian Carroll from Behavioral Health and Recovery Services. We're here today to recommend to the board the acceptance of the notification to relocate a number of DHRS programs to 500 North 9th Street in Modesto. This relocation provides an exciting opportunity to relocate, to co-locate programs that naturally support and complement each other. These programs are all currently located in Modesto. The programs are West Modesto Regional Services, Wellness Recovery Center, Psychiatric Liaison Clinic, Integrated Forensic Team, Mental Health Treatment Court, Forensics, Telecare contracts for their East Modesto Regional Services, Recovery Access Services, and West Side Homeless Outreach Programs. There's also two consumer family member organizations that will be there. By co-locating to a single one-stop location, a number of benefits are achieved. Community collaboration is aided by the presence of family organization, consumer organization, by co-locating and having a community meeting room for related organizations. This supports the board's priority of effective partnerships. A full range of services will be at this one site, convenient for our customers and their families, and will allow for seamless referrals and progression between programs. Clients will be able to transition from intensive services to less intensive services to wellness and recovery services, all at the same site. Clients and family members will be better able to provide support to each other at this one site. Specialty services such as housing, employment, independent living skills, benefits advocacy will all be available at this site. Integrated alcohol and drug and mental health outpatient services will be available. Clients and family members will have access to more services, groups, educational material, activities than would be possible at separate locations. This supports the board's priority of healthy community. We feel this move promotes easy access for our customers and family members, makes our services more family and consumer driven, promotes recovery and wellness, transformation of the system, efficient use of resources, economies of scale, integrated services, and better partnerships with the community. About half of the services that these programs provide are field-based. They're out in the field, and having the programs co-located will allow those programs to support each other. About half of the services are provided on-site, and the benefits here will be in terms of the shared resources and convenience to the clients. Staff and program also benefit from working side-by-side with each other. Specialties and specialty programs will be able to share learning from each other, sharing ideas and approaches, and becoming even better able to provide services. Funding will be more diversified and more stable. Infrastructure will be more efficiently supported. This supports the board's priority of a well-planned infrastructure. Economies of scale related to physician coverage, nursing coverage, licensed clinical staff, certified alcohol and drug counselors, and multiple levels of care will be supported. Much of these added benefits wouldn't be realized if the programs remained separate. At this time, I'd like to turn this over to Doug Holcomb, who will talk about some of the specifics of the facility.
Good morning, Chairman, Supervisors, and staff. What I want to talk a lot about is the benefits of the building from an administrative point of view. Adrian talked a little bit about economy of scale. There's going to be a benefit realized.
Thank you.
From the clerical support, the fleet services, data management. People are going to be able to go to one stop to work on different maintenance problems, computer problems. Different clerical programs can be put together so you don't have five or six clericals doing the same task in the same building. But probably one of the most important examples of this is that When you take our six largest programs that are spread throughout the county, and you look at the square footage allocated to each employee, it comes out to about 330 square foot per employee. By co-locating into this one center, we're reducing that down to 252 square foot per employee. So we're able to use the model that was used in this building and the development of the DA's office to start using team rooms and combining people and using interview rooms whenever we have clients come in. And this really helps us to position ourselves in a manner that when budget shortfalls come along, we can look at that, we have more options because we're using an efficient infrastructure. And that's really one of the goals of this project. Site specifications, it's 22,000 square feet, a little over that. There's 90 parking spots. The building is energy efficient. We have state-of-the-art heating and air conditioning. We have good insulation. And one of the things that we enjoy the most is it has automatic interior lighting. So when you walk into a room, this light comes on. When you leave the room, if you forgot to turn the light out, those lights are going to shut down. So we're really excited about kind of having a green imprint in the community. It's got 10 meeting rooms as opposed to 6 now. There's consumer family space. And then there's a community room. We're excited about the community room. This is a room that's available to our partner agencies. It's available to other programs who may not be stationed at the site. And this really allows for people to come in, do groups, do activities, and things like that for the community as a whole. Cost versus budget. The lease cost is $28,390 a month. This is $672 more than we are paying right now for all of the combined leases. So where are we going to get that money? Well, I'm hoping that the energy savings is going to offset this some degree. But that's hoping. Where we're going to come up with this money is the 9 core programs that are going to be in this building are going to need to come up with $75 per month to offset the cost. And they're committed to do that, to look at their other line items, look at their budget, and do so. And we think the benefits are going to far outweigh the cost. And to close, the 9th Street project strengthens our infrastructure utilizing existing resources. The bottom line is we get more bang for the buck, and this is good business. And with that, I thank you.
Is there any questions?
And I have a few, Mr. Chairman. Just concerning the office space in Kansas Avenue that we'll be vacating, what is the agreement at the present time with the property owner on that parcel? It's 1100, I think, Kansas Avenue.
On the Kansas Avenue property, we are on a month-to-month lease, which we gave notice that we'd be leaving. Actually, we have relocated. Have we moved, Weimer? On April 1st, we'll be moving that program that is in that site.
Okay, so if you're leaving, has there been any agreement between the county to lease that parcel for more than 5 years? I had talked to the property owner. I see he's here today, so I want to hear what he has to say. But he was under the assumption that we were going to lease it, that we had a 10-year lease instead of a 5.
The lease agreement that I have before me was a 5-year lease, of which part of the rent was for tenant improvements. At the end of the 5 years, there was a option renewal, which there was a 30-day ability to exercise that option, which we did not. Also, there was a increase of approximately, I think, 700 square feet in the remodel that during the course of the first 5 years was also paying off tenant improvements. But the lease agreement that I have doesn't say anything about 10 years. It's just an option for another 5 should we have chosen to do that.
I see. Well, there's 2 buildings there in Kansas Avenue. One of them you're vacating and one you're still occupying?
Correct.
Yeah, what office is in the one that's where we're still staying?
That houses our children's emotionally disturbed treatment program. there's a, I believe the square footage is less, and it's, we had considered trying to move them to the front building, but again, that was too big a building. We did look through all of our other leases that we have to see if any were coming up to termination and determine if we could move other of our programs in there into the front building that we're vacating. That was not, that didn't work out. We have talked with purchasing and let other agencies know that this space is available for lease. So we did try those options prior to vacating.
Okay. I'm just interested in what the property owner has to say. I haven't seen the lease or really know much about it.
Supervisors, my name is Chuck Cummins. My brothers and I own the building that we're referring to. Just a little history on this. 5 years ago, we were approached by Len Gundy, and he asked us if we would entertain the idea of expanding that building over there by initially 500 square feet. It was then increased to 700 square feet. In our discussions with Mr. Gundy and Jim Nelson, we had agreed that we would go, we would entertain this expense for a 10-year lease, but we would not do it for a 5-year lease. So in our conversations, that was agreeable to them. When they took it to their council, our next meeting, they came back and told us that the council will not allow them to entertain a lease period over 5 years, and that we would write the lease for 5 years. We would put a 5-year option period in it, and the only time that we would not exercise the option is if our funding was canceled. We spent $122,000 putting this addition on and doing the extra work in the building that they required at that time. Move the front entry door, remove a few walls, add a few walls, redo some counter space out in the front, a number of different items over and above the additional area. We also had the lease from the Builders Exchange next door property for additional parking space that we had to fence and pave and stripe. And they say this, the total expense to us was $122,000. We would never have entertained the idea of doing this if we weren't assured that it was a 10-year lease. We recognize the fact that it had to be written as a 5-year lease with a 5-year option. We also recognize the fact that from a legal standpoint, it's a 5-year lease. But you see the position of put us in. We relied on what we were told, that it was going to be a 10-year lease, or we wouldn't have entertained the idea of this expansion at all. So it's strictly an economic issue with us. I think your 9th Street project sounds like a very good deal. But on the other hand, the amount of money that we put in this building and the fact that we're not getting anything back, the fact that if they walk out of that building, we have to leave it the way that it is. We don't get the door relocated. We don't get the walls put back. We have this addition that we didn't want in the first place, but we accommodated the county because they have been good tenants for us for a number of years, and with a 10-year lease, it just made it feasible for us to do because we'd have a 10-year tenant there. Do you have any questions for me?
Well, maybe I have a couple. Is it, okay, This still is a 5-year lease. Who made all the arrangements that you had the impression this was going to be 10?
Like I said before, when we met with Ron Gundy and Jim Nelson, who represented the purchasing department, and Gundy, the maintenance department, like Doug does now, they're the ones that told us that, first of all, they're the ones that told us that a 10-year lease would be agreeable to them. It was then the council that told them that they couldn't write a 10-year lease. But just because they couldn't write it as a 10-year lease didn't mean that we couldn't have a 10-year lease, that they would have to write it in option form. So they assured us that the only way that they wouldn't exercise that second 5-year option is if the funding was canceled. Obviously, the funding hasn't been canceled.
No, I can see your point, but this is kind of an unknown question here. You've got a 5-year lease with an option of 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, county council might want to get a join on in this, because with the assumption, I think you're looking at it as a 5-year lease with a 5-year option that you're going to get the 5-year option.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's what, and I don't blame you. You put the money into it. I don't blame you. But to say that it's a 5-year lease with a 5-year option, but you're going to get it anyhow. Is that the way it sounds to me? Talk to me,
Miss Lynn. Well, I think as the gentleman has explained, from a legal standpoint, it is a 5-year lease, and it has an option. If the option is not exercised, then the lease is terminated. And in this instance, the county has chosen not to exercise the option. So,
it doesn't mean that we have to do it for 10 years. It just means it's the option of the county to extend it for another 5 years if they want to.
That's correct.
Right?
No.
No.
It was guaranteed to us that they would exercise the 5-year option unless, with a sole stipulation that they lose their funding, they wouldn't.
Well, I don't think that whoever you talk to has that guarantee that you're going to get that 5 years, when he just said it's the option of the county.
Well, that's the way the lease is written, correct. But we knew that that's the way they had to write the lease, but we were also assured that the option would be exercised. Now, we know that we're on thin ground here. I mean, there's no question about it.
No, pretty thin. I hate to get one like that, but you've got somebody saying we'll lease it for 5 years, then we'll take an option for 5 years. Maybe somebody else wants to join this conversation. But then somebody in the county says, but you're going to get it anyhow. You're going to get the other 5.
Mm-hmm.
Who has that authority to say that? All I'm asking about, who has the authority to say in the county, without this board knowing about it, that you're going to get the other 5?
Well, the lease is the controlling document, and it speaks for itself. And any representation that was made, again, the lease provisions are the controlling part of the document. So it's a 5-year lease with an option.
Period.
Right. We understand that.
Okay.
But the thing that we relied on was our association with the county. We had been leasing this building, or they had been leasing this building from us for 15 years or so. And we have done a lot of work with them. We've taken their word for things that they wanted us to do. They've always lived up to what they told us that they were going to do. And if we hadn't had that relationship with them, then we wouldn't have entered the deal, because it wasn't a written deal. And obviously, like I said, we're on thin ice here. We're on no ice, basically. All we have to do is we hope that the county will see the fact that the position that they put us in, and the money that they've made us spend, the fact that we have a 10-year lease that we have to exercise or continue to exercise with a buildings exchange. We've gone through all this expense, and hopefully the county will provide us with some type of some tenant to fill this void. And that's all we're asking for.
Okay.
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 Anything else?
Anybody else?
I just had a couple of questions. The county council, he said that the county cannot enter into a 10-year lease. Is there some legal requirement that we can't go above 5?
No, and so I'm not aware of that issue. I mean, looking at the agreement, under term, it says the term of this lease shall be for a period of 5 years. And it has a beginning date and an ending date.
So we could have entered in 10-year at the time, but we just chose not to?
That's my belief.
Now, were you county council at that time?
Yes.
And you did not tell these people that we could not enter into a lease over 5 years?
Yeah, no, I have no memory of that.
So you're trying to tell me that they lied to us from the beginning?
No, I'm just saying the agreement, sir, is very, very clear. And when it says term, and a term is set forth 5 years, from a legal standpoint, that is a controlling, and it's clear in the document.
If you have two buildings there, apparently. I haven't seen the building, so I don't know how it's set up. The other building is still occupied. What is the status of the lease on that one?
They're typically 3-year leases, and they've been renewed every three years, except for the arts. I think the arts department, whatever it is a 1-year deal.
You have the two buildings there. It's not clear to me. Are you? Did this 5-year lease include both buildings?
No.
Or just
the front building.
So that's the only one you're concerned about,
yeah.
Is that one? Mm-hmm. And this $122,000 that you spent remodeling, if you have not recovered the money yet?
At the time we entered in the lease, the rent was $1 a square foot. We increased the rent to $1.15 a square foot, and that we recovered with that additional 15 cents. We recovered around $49,000. Then we also agreed that we would reduce the rent back to $1.05 at the end of the 5-year period.
I see. So you still out $73,000 in tenant improvement?
Plus the lease that we have to continue.
Can I just want to add, under the clause, option to renew, it reads as follows. This lease may be renewed at the option of the lessee, which is the county, for a period of 5 years from the expiration of the original term, and succeeding 0 periods on the same term. Such options are to be exercised in writing at least 1 month prior to the termination of the existing lease period, and the renewal will be subject to negotiation. So.
Okay. Well, I don't know what to say. I think we're renting a new place for $1.25 a square foot, and we're moving out of one that costs us $1.05. It's too bad the lease wasn't clearer, because this man spent, you know, quite a bit of money remodeling this building to the specs that the county wanted, and then has moved out.
Question I'd have, Mr. Cummins, did you have legal counsel on your side of the lease?
Obviously not.
It would seem to me that if there were additional pieces of information related to the agreement, those could have at least been mentioned. That we understand the condition that the county cannot enter into a 10-year lease, so we're doing it for 5, and conditional on the fact that if they continue to have their funding, it will be a mandatory renewal of the option. And none of that is mentioned here. It seems to be quite a glaring error.
There's a clause in every contract that we have with the county that says if they lose their funding, then they have the option, or they can vacate. So that's a typical clause.
In the loss of funding clause, it is placed in an old county contracts, is interpreted here as in other contracts that even during the 5-year period, if in fact there is a lack of funding, then upon 120 days notice, the county could terminate the agreement.
And that happens. It happened to a facility in Oakdale that Behavioral Health had lost the funding with Prop 63 got passed and the state cut back on traditional funding, and they had to vacate that property in Oakdale as well. So that happens, and that's just one of the risks that landlords take when they lease with the county. And unfortunately, that does happen.
And we're well aware of that risk, and like I say, it's in every contract we have with the county. So the thing that has us, we relied on the representation of the representatives of the county that we were dealing with, that we would have this option renewed. Whether we should have done that or not, obviously at this point, I don't think they could have put it in writing. And if the council wouldn't have allowed them to go for a 10-year lease, then we wouldn't have done the addition.
Chairman Mayfield, can I ask a question of our CEO? Is there, Mr. Robinson, is there a deadline that a week or two would change our decision here? For me, it would change my decision if I had an employee that made that promise. Then I would feel obligated to follow up with the promise. Has your office had the chance to go back and speak with any of these employees as to do they remember any of this conversation?
No, we have not, at least not to the best of my knowledge. I think that would, at this juncture, given the uncertainty about instruction that may have, or discussion which may have occurred between the owner of the property and the department, I think it would be wise to at least have that conversation and be able to follow through and come back to the board with a definitive response to that question.
Okay. And I don't want to create any undue hope here that we're going to do anything different than what we're doing, but I think just it'd be wise if we followed through and seen if there were two parts of the party that remember the conversation.
That'd be fine. Yeah. I mean, like I say, we're on thin water. All we're looking for is somebody to pay rent.
Yeah. And in the meantime, maybe getting a realtor in there to start promoting that a little bit wouldn't be a bad idea.
Well, so if we can't count on the county, then we'll have to go to a realtor.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Could we just continue the item for a couple of weeks, or do we need a motion to do
that? I would suggest that two things happen. One, I believe that it is in the interest of the department and the programs to proceed with the item as it is proposed. The one outstanding issue would then be the disposition of that particular rental. I don't believe that the recommendation to consolidate is going to change. It's just the use and application of that particular site if we have to relocate other services into it that would need to be resolved.
Okay, how many square foot is in the building under discussion?
5,500.
So we're looking at 5,500 a month is what the rent we're talking about. 60 grand a year, $300,000.
We're talking, the building was actually 100 square foot units in it. With the county's operation, that has all mingled into one. But the building is adaptable to 1,200 square foot units, 24, 36, in multiples of 1,200. Plus this 700-foot addition, it would have to be part of one of the 1,200-feet areas.
But it's 5,500. It's $1 a foot, right?
$1.05.
Okay.
And Kathy Blair from Purchasing is looking for other tenants. I mean, it's not that we aren't looking actively for other tenants that could possibly move in there of other county departments.
Okay. The only Mr. Robinson has suggested that we go ahead and approve the consolidation over on 9th Street. But to me, if we do that, we're leaving a $300,000 gap out there.
No, I don't agree with that. If this board has the authority to do it, an employee of the county doesn't have the authority to say, well, it's a 5-year lease, but we're going to give you 10. Either somebody's off track here, or either this board's off track. As far as I want to finish this thing up one way or the other, is that we know what we're going to get into before we get into it. I don't see this as something we'll just pass it today and then we'll work out the details. I want the details in front of me before I pass it.
I don't
put the rest of the board, but I can't do that.
My understanding, and of course, you know, Denise isn't here, but my understanding was that the board already approved this concept and we're here just providing an update and information on it today.
We might have approved the concept, but now we have the details.
Okay.
So I think Chairman Mayfield is absolutely correct.
They always say the devil is in the details. Okay. So the devil is in the details today. We need to find out the details before we move ahead. Hey, that's for me. I don't know the rest of the board.
No, I would agree with the chairman that I would like to have a look at and have the employees that worked on this lease come back to us and tell us their side of the story. This man spent $122,000 under the assumption that we were going to stay there for the 10 years, and he's not recovered that cost. I believe he's got $73,000 yet to make remodeling that he would not have done had not the county, at least in his opinion, agreed to lease that property for 10 years. That's just a concern to me, and I'd like to have you come back to us with the side of the story if you've looked into it. I'm probably okay with this consolidation there, but I just wanted to get this clarified to what actually was promised to this man.
I would ask, Madeline, have we already entered into a lease agreement for the 500 North 9th Street properties?
Yes, we have.
So we're already committed for the properties into which we will consolidate these services. We still have the outstanding question. Clearly, legally, the county has a right to exit the lease agreement at the end of the 5-year term, as it has indicated that it will. We do have an unresolved question. Was there a promise made? We certainly have an ethical responsibility to answer that question. But I don't believe that stands in the way of this consolidation should the board choose to act on it, since we have already obligated ourselves for the property at 500 North 9th Street.
And, Mr. Chairman, what I do just want to make clear in looking at this agreement, the agreement was for a term that began on September 1st, 2002, and terminated on August 31st, 2007. So the county has been in there on a month-to-month tenancy, which there is a provision for holding over. So the term ended, the 5-year term ended on August 31st, 2007.
So where does that leave us, County Council?
Well, again, from a legal standpoint, it is very clear. This agreement has been legally terminated. It was completed on August 31st. There was a provision for a month-to-month holding over tenancy period, and that has been exercised, and the county is in there. At the end of the month, when they're gone and they leave, there is no legal obligation to continue this lease.
And I ask you one more time, so I'm clear of it. Could the county have written a 10-year lease? Is there any legal reason why we could not have?
I'm not aware of any prohibition.
You said that the county could not legally enter into a lease for more than 5 years, but in your opinion, was that true or not?
Well, the county could have entered into an agreement for a 10-year period if it chose to do so. I'm just looking at the lease document. It chose not to do so. It chose to do a 5-year term with a 5-year option. That option was not exercised. So, and again, unless, as Ms. Robinson indicated, we can always contact the individual. Well, I'm not sure if he's still a county employee.
Well, that is one of the issues, is that the purchasing agent is no longer has retired. So we have no idea exactly what he might have said. We can check with, again, with our employee who was managing facilities at the time. I will check again with him, Ron Gandy. Okay, we had asked him. His recollection was that he never made a commitment like that. That was his recollection. We did try to follow up on this to find out as best we could.
It seems to me like we're starting to go in circle for the second or third time.
Yeah, okay.
I'd like to move approval of item B4 as it stands, and then ask the CEO's office to do an investigation of those folks that don't work for the county anymore but still rely on the retirement program. To have that conversation and then just bring us back the report.
I'll second that. Okay, then. So what we're going to do, we're going to stand by the lease. It's a 5-year lease with a 5-year option. Is that what you're saying, Jeff?
Yes.
Period.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a 5-year lease. It's with a 5-year option. That's period. There's no promises, no nothing. I hope you guys can live with it, but that's the way we got to do it. Okay. We have is there a motion? Have you made a motion?
I did.
Okay, I need a second.
Who seconded it?
You second it? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Who said no?
Bill said no.
Bill said no. Okay.
I'll oppose it too then. I just...
Okay, he opposed it.
It's too much unanswered questions here, and I just don't think this is right.
Okay, so we have a 3-2 vote. Okay, and it would be Bill and Jim opposed it, and three of us... Okay, you got that? All right.
And then I will bring you a report back on the 18th of March relative to my findings relative to the subject matter and negotiations on the lease agreement.
Okay. It's still a 5-year lease, a 5-year option. I just want to reiterate this. Okay. And the only one that makes a decision whether we would keep it 5 years or 10 years is this board up here. It's not any employee or anybody... So anybody dealing with the county, don't figure that you're going to get something you're not going to get without going before this board, because it's not going to happen. Okay, thank you. We'll go down to B5.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Patty Hill-Thomas from the Chief Executive Office. Joining me at the table are Eileen Nelson and Daryl Long, and joining us in this important presentation will be Sheriff Adam Christensen. We're pleased to bring you another series of recommendations today on proceeding toward expanding the Stanislaus County Public Safety Center, more specifically, finding a way in these difficult financial times to expand our jail facilities, much needed to ensure a safe community. This is a collaborative effort between the Sheriff's Office and the Chief Executive Office, and has actually been participated in beyond our departments by the Planning and Community Development Department, the Health Services Agency, the Community Services Agency, the Alliance WorkNet, our Public Defender, our District Attorney, our Probation Officer, and the County's Environmental Review Committee. Expanding a jail facility is a big effort, and it's a significant public policy issue faced by your board and, quite frankly, being faced across the nation. In the midst of a state of California prison overcrowding crisis and a tremendous shortfall in funds needed to build important local detention facilities, we're bringing you a series of recommendations today that we hope move us closer toward expanding our jail facilities. I just want to recognize the people in the room because we spent a lot of hours and there was a lot of years to go on this effort together, and everyone is just doing a tremendous extra effort in trying to work together and be creative about how we attack this very big issue. I'd like to start with the CEO of staff, particularly Eileen Nelson, who has led our efforts on AB 900 and bringing this report to you today. Daryl Long, Don Feenister, Mark Lozier, Monica Nina Reed, Richard Jant, Jim Kortz, and Tim Fedorchak. And the sheriff's staff, we're spending a lot of time together, again, learning how to be creative in a very challenging time. Sheriff Christensen, Undersheriff Bill Hine, Bill Duncan, Brenda Suarez, Greg Clifton, Dan Wirtz, and Jennifer Hudson, all here in the audience today as well. What we want to do is to bring you a series of recommendations and to assure you that we're not asking you today to vote on building a 420-bed jail expansion. We're asking you to take the next steps in trying to help us find funds and keep the project on task so that we can accomplish that objective ultimately. But it will always be dependent upon how much money is available at the local level and your board's decision in that regard. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Eileen and Daryl.
Good morning, Chairman Mayfield, members of the board, Mr. Robinson and Mr. Krosnick. On June 26th, your board approved our needs assessment report. That report outlined a variety of facility needs, and we also did some estimates of what the staffing costs would be to expand our jail capacity, as well as some of our law enforcement facilities that we presented at last week's board meeting. The report suggested or recommended that we replace the men's jail, that we demolish it, and that we also demolish the honor farm. This slide shows what the projected number of beds would be through the year 2040. Essentially, from what we have today, it suggests that we should be adding almost 1,400 beds. And by 2010, we, according to the study, need an additional 420 beds. The cost, as we presented in the June report, just basically for construction and facility needs, at today's dollars is over $210.5 million. Today's report talks about staffing and operational costs of $17.3 million. With another maybe $200,000 for debt costs. The 17.3 largely is a general fund cost, and we really need to look at that closely because basically that is the big ticket item if you consider that. Our current facilities at the Hackett Road location, we have the Public Safety Center, 726 beds. We started this project in 1989 when we purchased the site and did some initial infrastructure improvements. We built our first beds, 294 in 1992. We added the kitchen laundry where we do all centralized cooking and laundry for the three facilities. We added the Sheriff Operations Center, additional beds, and by the year 2006, we added 100 beds, in that what we did is we double bunked existing beds, bringing our capacities to 1,492 beds. As I mentioned previously, the men's jail located downtown adjacent to the courthouse, maximum capacity of 396 beds. The plan calls for demolition of this facility and replacement with a court holding facility. We still have to manage inmates at that location as they come to and from court. The Honor Farm, located on Grayson Road, maximum capacity of 370 beds. This is an aging facility. We currently have some identified needs associated with backup power and water treatment systems. This facility, again, is recommended to be demolished and these beds built at the Public Safety Center. Again, these would be replacement beds. What we're talking about today are actual new beds. We have 1,492 beds at a maximum that we can house inmates. As mentioned, we need another 420 by year 2010. And critical to all this is that we build the jail core operations building. It's a key component of the next steps before we add additional beds to Public Safety Center.
Good morning. What this matrix represents is the pretty much what Eileen was going over with you. It's the average daily population.
You know, take the microphone. There you go.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, there you go. That's better.
growth in a number of phases of construction and bed additions through double bunking that occurred since that time, and to its current level, Eileen just mentioned, of 1492. And the red dots represent a factored by a percentage the county population, so that you can see a comparison of that. And then the little yellow boxes kind of represent the 2007 needs assessments that we had conducted by PRG Consulting and how that growth would occur representative to the county population. So you can see there is a pretty good sized gap. And again, we're not here today to tell you we need to build those today, but we wanted to represent in some other way that gap if we do nothing from our current. Now, the sheriff is fortunate, if we can use that term, that there are a number of release mechanisms that he has access to and their staff have been using for some time, as this matrix represents, and that there are a number of opportunities to take people out of custody. That's the good news, that they have an option of taking people out of custody so they leave those beds open. The bad news is that's putting people on the street who normally should be in jail, and that gets worse every day. And as the years go by, the type of person that goes out, it just continues to back up, for lack of a better term, that type of inmate that we have in jail today. Some of our challenges, of course, the Rodriguez versus Stanislaus, this federal cap placed on us in 1990. It was once a means of compliance so that we would ensure that beds wouldn't be double bunked or overcrowded, and now it's a tool just to ensure that the sheriff's staff use so that they can keep the facilities open and still maintain some kind of compliance. The other issue that aggravates this entire issue is that the type of inmate. Back in 1988, when Ketchell did their needs assessment, they projected at this day that approximately 50% of the people in custody would be sentenced or misdemeanor type people, and the rest of those people would be unsentenced and possibly violent type. The reality is we're closer to a 90-10, 90% being those persons who are in custody who can't go anywhere else. Their violence, and so the type of inmate is more violent inmate, increase in security needs and requirements we have for that. Also, in the bottom line is the funding needs, as Eileen mentioned to that piece, is that basically that what we need far exceeds what we can afford. Hopefully, and throughout these endeavors and throughout the next oncoming years, we're going to be able to do some things that we can address that. Some of the challenges, again, that we face on this, as you've heard, you know that the governor is making a number of cuts. Some of those will include the fact that he's going to be releasing, based on budget and some federal charges against the state as well, a number that they're using, about 22,000 state prisoners back into custody. There's no clear number to what that's going to represent in Stanislaus County, but the best number we've been able to identify is close to 400 or 500 additional people in Stanislaus County who normally would be in prison. That means in right now in Stanislaus County jails, there's an average daily population of about 120 persons waiting to go to have a review through parole or going to state prison. Last year, they sent over 2,300 people to state prison. With the release of these inmates and the federal lawsuits that are pending against the state right now, that number could triple. It could be as many as 400 people who won't go anywhere. And the bad news on top of all that is, none of those numbers are being factored into our 2007 needs assessment. All we have is a current jail need based on population growth and that comparison of our growth throughout the years. We do have some opportunities. There's some light at the end of the tunnel, so that is state funding through AB 900, Public Safety and Offender Rehabilitation Services Act of 2007. That is a grant that is due on March the 18th. You'll be hearing about that some more in this presentation and the fact that the amounts that we wish to apply for. With that, there's a caveat that the state is going to require they're going to give preference to the counties that are awarded that money to those people who will site a reentry facility, for lack of a better term, a mini prison, of up to 500 beds, which could be housed county staff, but preferable to the state that it's state employees. And the sheriff, I'm sure, will have his opinion on that. We are going through local funding, utilizing public facility fees, and you'll hear about that again later on this presentation, where we're going to do our best attempt to try to put something out there that's going to take care of our local growth. And, of course, we have the alternatives to custody, and I mentioned those just briefly a little while ago, coupled with inmate programs, which Stanislaus County
I will tell you, it has been on the leading edge historically, and I will tell you nationwide on its program services for lack of funding to keep them going, and you'll hear about those as well.
Mr. Chairman, what we have before you is a series of recommendations today, and you will hear regular reports from our team over this next year. The companion activity now is that we need to initiate environmental review. Regardless of how many bids we're able to build or how we attack the issue of needing the core building and some level of new construction, it's appropriate given the amount of time that's passed since the county's acquisition and original environment review for the Public Safety Center to initiate the new study. And this has been reviewed with the county's environment review committee. We'll be evaluating issues such as traffic, air quality, land use compatibility, safety, climate change, and others. I want to show you a map, an aerial of our Public Safety Center. It was, Mr. Krausnick was instrumental in the acquisition of this property nearly 20 years ago. It is bounded by the railroad tracks, and you can see that the community of Ceres has built right up next to the county's Public Safety Center. The middle 100 acres in this site, which is also bounded by Crow's Landing Service and Hackett Road, are destined and planned to be the county's jail site for generations and generations to come. And fortunately, one thing that the new needs assessment confirmed was that there is available property there to build out those future jail needs well beyond the year 2040 that's actually projected in the report. All of the other uses on the site are considered to be buffer uses. And as a result of litigation relative to condemning this property, that decision was also affirmed by the Superior Court at that time that it's appropriate to buffer a jail site with other public facilities. And so we have our Community Services Agency, we have our Agricultural Center, we have our Ray Simon Criminal Justice Training Center. Your board has designated the opportunity for a veterans hospital if Stanislaus is selected at that site. The area shown on this map that's not in blue is that core 100 acres. And if you look at it, you might think, I wonder why they built those buildings so far apart. And that's because all the buildings in the master plan fit right in the middle so that they can all be served from a central core function and reduce the county's operating costs. That's the same issue present with wanting to close the downtown jail and make it a court-holding facility at Slays and the Honor Farm. The Sheriff's Department does a tremendous job, but they have to operate three jails in three locations, and that comes at a great expense. And the study suggests, and we know our budget suggests, that if we could afford to bring those jail facilities into one location, we could do it in a much more efficient and less costly way. So that's another important reason why we want to continue to pursue any funding opportunities that are available. I want to just talk briefly about numbers and then turn it over to the sheriff. The construction that's been done since 1990 to now was all bits and pieces of housing units and support for kitchen and laundry. The jail core construction building, estimated at $29.3 million, is essential to support any of the further jail bed construction. Our 2010 estimate of 420 beds needed could come as a result of double bunking 120 of the existing beds. That's all that's left available to double bunk. And building 300 additional medium or maximum security beds at a cost of $50.7 million. If we look at the next slide, we would suggest that between the state and the county, if we were successful in our application for AB 900 funds, and using the county's public facility fees, estimated right now at $29 million, and potentially one-time county funding and some limited debt obligation, that the county would have available $39.7 million. We would be looking at asking the state for a significant amount of money if we were to be pursuing this level of project. That state share would be nearly $40 million. Now, in order to get that state money, preference points are given to counties that will agree to site a prison reentry facility. It is our recommendation today that we not agree to site a prison facility in Stanislaus County. It's at too much of financial risk to the county to pursue that, but that we pursue any and all available jail construction bonds to meet or funds to meet our local needs. With that, I would like to introduce Sheriff Christensen, who's been instrumental statewide on this issue as well.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Chairman Mayfield, members of the board, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Krosnick, Adam Christensen, your sheriff. And again, I want to start by echoing Patty Hill's comments in the beginning of the presentation. Again, thanking not only your team, but certainly other members of the county and members of my team who have come together to work very diligently on this project to provide you with the best possible solutions and options so that we can proceed in the interest of public safety and try to address issues of jail overcrowding and what are we going to do with people who continue to victimize our community in many different ways. Certainly, jail alternatives is a tool that we use to manage our daily inmate population. The problem with that, however, as recently demonstrated by the Modesto Bee's interest in a couple of folks who, quite frankly, should have been in custody, but we simply don't have room for them, are out in a home detention monitoring program. And, of course, there are many allegations about their extracurricular activities, most of which are not proven, but nevertheless, again, we demonstrate that people who should be in custody aren't. And it's simply because we don't have enough room. Certainly, our jail alternatives programs include early intervention, prevention programs, rehabilitation, vocational training. I mean, there's a lot of things that we can do to continue to try to work on our recidivism rates in an effort to manage our daily inmate population. And in this next fiscal year, certainly I'll be coming back asking this board to fund current technology, that being GPS technology, so that we can expand our ability to monitor people who are out of custody and know exactly where they're at and what they're doing, rather than just having a home monitoring program based on old technology that alerts us if they're not home. GPS is much more effective, especially in the area of auto theft. I know we've talked at great length with the district attorney, the courts, Jerry Powers, the chief probation officer, and certainly others, in utilizing that technology to perhaps track our auto thieves and certainly to track sexual predators. So all very good programs. With regard to AB 900, certainly I, as my fellow sheriffs in California, were big advocates of this. We got behind it. We got behind the governor, Governor Schwarzenegger, in an effort to partner with CDCR to try to manage people coming back out of state prison who would come back to this community anyway. A bus ticket and $200 and you're at the transit center in downtown Modesto and you have to then report to your parole agent. And occasionally I do forward to you our watch reports, and many times you see that there are arrests on parole violations and we have to bring those people back into custody and get them back into the system, and it's become very difficult. The problem since then with AB 900 is it evolved from a partnership to, exactly as the staff mentioned to you, a plan to site prisons. And I simply, as the sheriff, am not going to agree to siting prisons in Stanislaus County that we don't have any control over. In the partnership originally, we were going to site these facilities and we were going to run them. To be honest, I think the sheriff's department does a much better job managing housing and supervising inmates than the California Department of Corrections does. But then they turned and decided that they wanted to run them and they wanted to be able to call the shots, and I, like many of my other sheriffs, disagree with that we shouldn't allow that to happen. And so, consequently, that has a negative impact on our ability to get the funding from the state to expand our own facilities. That doesn't prevent us from continuing in that effort, and we will, I agree, we should go after whatever funding might be available. But certainly our decision not to agree to site a facility and let them run it is going to reduce the number of points we get, which therefore will reduce our chances of any funding. I agree that consolidation of our services is the most effective and efficient means of operation. Certainly the downtown facility is no longer cost effective to operate and maintain. It has a lot of structural issues, infrastructure, that type of thing that we continue to mitigate. And so I am an advocate of consolidating our services in one location. I'm not sure that we're going to be able to effectively get out of the Honor Farm anytime soon. I think that that facility and some of the vocational opportunities it has to offer is still viable in the short term. But again, those are discussions that we will continue to have, and we'll continue to bring this board recommendations. I do know that on a couple of occasions, Jerry Powers has talked about perhaps utilizing that facility as a youth camp. There might be some advantages there. But certainly consolidation is a better form of government. If you perhaps watch Crow's Landing Road every morning, there's usually a parade of 12-passenger vans headed downtown where we move about 120 inmates a day from various facilities through the court system downtown and then back out to those facilities. It's very labor-intensive. There are security risks. It certainly opens up more opportunity for inmates to get contraband inside of our facilities. So, again, consolidation is an option. And I would share with this board that we have had some preliminary discussions with the administration of courts, the presiding judge, and others, in an effort to perhaps get them involved in the process and suggest that in addition to this build-out, we also consider adding courtrooms to the Public Safety Center out on Hackett Road so that we're able to move inmates from a secure facility to a secure facility without ever seeing the light of day. And those, of course, would cover things like felony arraignments, preliminary hearings, things that wouldn't necessarily require that we transport so many people downtown other than perhaps for a felony jury trial or a special appearance. So that's a consideration as well. Bottom line, we need to move this forward. I appreciate the board's support of the Sheriff's Department, which has been tremendous. I appreciate the fact that all of you have made public safety and the services that we provide to our community a top priority. It's very important as we move forward that we be able to appropriately house those who victimize the community. And with your support, we'll get there, even if it's a phased approach. But I believe that our recommendations today are at least a good step in the right direction in assuring the public that we are going to do our very best to protect them and provide the most efficient and effective law enforcement services that we can to Stanislaus County. Thank you very much.
Your Board of Supervisors Capital Facilities Committee, comprised of Chairman Mayfield and Supervisor Grover, have been through this issue at length with all of the departments impacted and considered that assessment and have concurred in the recommendations that we brought forward to you today. In conclusion, our efforts are all addressed at focusing on finding a way to ensure a safe community within the constraints we face financially. We have five recommendations before you today, and I think we're starting at number five. But our recommendations are to authorize the Chief Executive Officer to submit an application to the State of California by the March 18th deadline for the construction of up to 300 additional beds, asking for the state to participate in that. Our second recommendation is for you to approve the state-required formal resolution. Our third recommendation is for you to authorize the Chief Executive Officer and the Planning and Community Development Department to issue the request for proposals for consulting services and prepare the initial study for environmental review. Our fourth recommendation is to ask you today to approve our recommendation to decline the siting of a state reentry prison facility in Stanislaus County at this time. And finally, to direct the Auditor Controller to establish the project budget. We're recommending bringing in $2 million of public facility fees set aside for the purpose of designing and planning and ultimately building a jail expansion project. And with that, we'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Yes, sir.
I do have a comment, and Chair Christensen touched on something that concerns me very, very much, and that's the cost of transportation of inmates to and back from court. Just as we're concerned about siting a reentry prison facility in the county and what our ongoing costs would be, that's one of my big concerns, is the ongoing cost of transportation of inmates to court. So I am glad that the conversations are continuing with the court on both building courtrooms out there and also as technology advances, the teleconferencing of arraignment hearings and so forth. And I think that's an important part that we have to look at before we make the final step and authorize the building of the jail. We have cost of public defender, district attorney, if the courtrooms are out there. There's so much to look at, and I think we need to make sure we have a really good eye on what our ongoing costs are going to be.
Anyone else?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I had a couple of questions and things that were not clear to me. This reentry facility that the state wants us, how is that different than a prison? Is this something like what we used to call a halfway house? There's not an explanation in there exactly what a reentry facility is.
Well, the original concept was designed or targeted specifically at those prisoners in the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation who are on their last year of commitment, would come back to the county. Those who would come back anyway with that bus ticket and $200, with that last year to serve, they would come back to a reentry facility, and there's where they would serve their last year locally, and we would provide vocational training, life skills training, basically do a better job of trying to get them reintegrated back into society. That was the original concept, and that's why the sheriffs got behind it, because it came with this money for the build-out of our facilities. That morphed into its prison, run by them, owned by them, operated by them, independent of the sheriff's department. It's a prison where they can simply put people who are going to be paroled back to the community anyway. So its original intent has changed, and that's why most of the sheriffs, myself included, have backed off and said, we're not doing this.
Okay, so it's basically a prison then.
It's a prison. That's exactly what it is.
And you thought it might be the best one to answer this. I was out to the jail with you about 2 weeks ago, and I'm just having a hard time visualizing what this core operations building, it cost of $29 million is. I looked at that control center that you have that opens the cells, but apparently that's not what the core operations building is. It must be something different than that. And I went to look at what this was, but apparently what I looked at is not
when we
that we're being asked to build.
When the Public Safety Center in its present configuration was constructed, we got a significant amount of state bail construction or state bond construction money, but all we got money was for bids. And so what we did, what the county did, is do some temporary workarounds in order to allow the women's jail at that time that was located in the East Modesto to be closed. So that control area you saw, or the temporary, now nearly 20 years later, booking area, is really only sized for the number of beds there. And the core support building has everything else, medical, central control, state of the art, all of the support functions, some of which are housed in the downtown jail now, that are needed to really manage a large jail facility that is envisioned. And we can go, Daryl can go through the list if you like, but it's a significant investment in all the support and security spaces as well as medical to ensure that the whole jail system will operate properly. And that $29 million estimate came out in 2007 originally, and I'll give credit to the Sheriff's Department. They've looked very closely at how they could economize that support building. The original master plan suggested that building could have cost $50 million. So there has been another look at what would be needed to support the jail of that size.
If you recall during your visit, Mr. Supervisor, especially in the booking area, remember we told you that right now we're only booking female inmates at the Public Safety Center. While we house males, they're booked downtown, they're classified, and they're moved. So the facilities as they stand right now won't be able to accommodate an increase if we go to centralized booking, centralized medical, whatever it is. When you were there, if you kind of remember the facility,
I remember that part.
They're not big enough. And so there has to be
the expansion of the what we call the core, which includes a control facility, because again, the one that you toured won't support all of the housing units that you toured with.
That was part of my question, then. The core operations building includes control center.
It would, oh. Yes.
Okay, plus other things. Okay,
plus many other things.
Okay, I get.
Oh, you use that microphone. No.
Yeah, if you could run through it as fast as that went out there, you know, to look at this, and I just
had the large area.
I'm understanding that.
The large dirt area, the kind of a Gaza Strip space out there, just to the south of the Sheriff's Operations Center, and to the, I guess it's the east of the current Public Safety Center site, is where the core building itself would lie. And it has a number of functions. First, as the sheriff mentioned, it would create a central booking area that would be able to handle booking through the next 30 years. So we'll have that growth, which if you've been into the jail and where the majority of bookings occur now, it's called a control area, but it's really an out-of-control area because of all the people that go through it and the releases and the bookings that go through there. Also in there is a central property area, which will handle property growth through the next 30 years. There is also a transportation area, a court transportation area, which is accommodates more the type of inmate that we're going to have to move and where they will have to be staged pending transportation and when they come back to the facility. It also includes that control area, which is in its true sense of the form a control area. When you were at the Public Safety Center and you went into the B unit, and which currently operates all of the Public Safety Center, in its original version is only to operate that housing unit. It's only in its temporary use that it does the entire facility. We can't add any more beds or any more facilities out there unless we enlarge that control area, and it would be sort of a second floor area on top of the central core booking area and whatnot. As Patty and the sheriff mentioned, there are courtrooms projected or identified space for two courtrooms or hearing rooms in that same core area, and along with all the safety corridors and all those pieces that go through there as well. It also includes administrative space for support staff and detention administration to handle its growth to support the detention facilities themselves.
And again, if you may recall on our tour just outside of the staff dining room, most of those administrative functions are in a temporary modular building that was there on site as you saw the academy class come up. So we're trying to consolidate all of those services in an effort to
put everything in one central place.
Right.
Okay, I understand it better now. Just one last question, maybe. Coroner's facility replacement was listed under the discussion, but we're not considering that today.
Today's recommendations are focused on the jail expansion side. With your board's approval, you've already granted. We have initiated the planning for the coroner's facility. We'll be bringing those recommendations back to you separately, along with their funding source. They would not be eligible for the state funding, so we did not include those recommendations today.
Okay, thank you.
Is there anyone else?
Okay.
So what we're doing today, Patty, is we're asking for the money. We're not committing ourselves to any reentry or anything.
That's correct.
Okay. Yes. We're just asking for the money.
Okay. We're asking for the money, and we're asking you to initiate the environmental review.
And if we get the money, what would be the cost? If we get the money, if we did, if we got the money, then what would be the ongoing cost that the county would have to pony up during that period of time?
If we got the money that we're requesting from the state,
mm-hmm.
Which would be a challenge because we're not agreeing to site the prison facility, mm-hmm. we would be able to build 300 new beds and double bunk 120 existing beds. And our estimate for staffing that would be $17.5 million a year, 3 or 4 years from now if we were to proceed with that. What's more likely to happen is that we will bring you a phased project depending upon any success we have with the state. Chances are, and we've been evaluating what all the other counties are doing, and many county board of supervisors both this Tuesday, today and next Tuesday are considering the same kind of recommendations. And from day to day it changes about which counties are pursuing the prison reentry and which counties are pursuing state construction bids, that it's very likely that there will be a lot more requested from all the counties than the state has to allocate. And that was always the case before. So we're in it for anything that we can actually obtain. And if the state were to allocate any funds, we would bring back that project to you with the local match and see what was practical for us to build on our own. Because the state is using lease revenue bonds, which is a really challenging approach to construct, to use to finance prison and jail construction, and is currently being litigated, it will probably be some time before any state dollars actually flow to counties. But we have much planning to continue to do as well, both our programming, we have an initiated design, and as we're recommending to you today, we initiate environmental review. All of these things all going along the same path concurrently, so that we hope we can bring you a credible project that we can afford and finance. The biggest ticket is that staffing cost, and that's a general fund obligation.
Right. I'm just going to ask that that's a general fund obligation. Yes. And even before we start, if we did get the money, even before we start anything, we'd have to find out where that general fund money is going to come from to staff all.
We would. And you may recall, I'm sure you do recall, in the
current year budget, you've
allocated $3 million to start to build capacity toward affording at some level of jail expansion. Mm-hmm. Now, we spoke to you last week about, given our own budget situation and the state's budget crisis, we may have to find alternatives for that money. But ultimately, there will be some level of jail expansion needed. It has to be consistent with our debt capacity as well. You may recall that we had a debt capacity analysis done just last year, really looking forward to what could the county alone afford to construct if we were to construct a jail building. And that capacity was set at $72 million. And my point is it's just a very complex set of circumstances that have to be considered. How much can we afford in debt? How much can we pay cash for? How much could we get from the state? And ultimately, how do we really afford that increase in operational costs? Today, if we were making a recommendation today, obviously today we could not afford that. But we want to continue to work toward this effort and find that balance to meet as many needs as possible.
Dick, you got something you want to say?
Well, as I'm listening to the discussion, I think what we're really doing is we're keeping our name in the pot, and as this develops, we still will be eligible with the choices determined if we want to go further as the requirements come. But we need to keep our name in the pot and continue to see what develops. I believe that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay. I'd like to move approval of the 5 staff recommendations.
It's been moved by Jeff Grover.
Second.
By Bill O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried 5-0.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's see where we're at now.
D4.
D1?
Didn't we pull C3?
We pull C3.
Not for action today.
Right, to return in probably 2 weeks.
Okay.
D4.
Good morning, Chairman Mayfield and members of the board. I'm Nancy
morning.
Brown. This is Erin Farnan. We're in the Community Development Division. As you are aware, Stanislaus County is an entitlement jurisdiction for community development block grant funds. We're now entering our 7th year. An annual action plan has been developed to set the goals of the county and the 5 city consortium members in the countywide CDBG consortium. This morning, we're requesting that you approve the draft annual action plan and open the required 30-day public review period. We're also requesting that you set a public hearing for April 8th to consider the final annual action plan and close the public comment review period. And with that, I will turn it over to Erin, who will go over the annual action plan for you.
Thank you, Chairman Mayfield, members of the board, Mr. Krosnick, and Mr. Robinson.
My name is Aaron Farnan, Associate Planner. Each year we have the opportunity to present these federal funds from housing urban development. They serve three objectives: to benefit the low and moderate income population, help prevent or eliminate slum or blight conditions, and in some cases, for instance in the 1997 flood, meet a particular urgent need where a portion of the funds can be set aside. Each year we have the opportunity to contact 7 participating cities to see if they'd like to participate in the consortium. Of those, 5 are currently participating: Ceres, Newman, Oakdale, Patterson, and Waterford. Our 0809 allocation, as you'll see, is on the right there. It's just over almost $2.5 million for community development block grants. Also, almost $110,000 for emergency shelter grant funds, and those directly benefit the homeless population. Of those funds, we set aside $320,000 for administration, approximately 10% for public services, $60,000 for fair housing activities, as well as economic development or workforce development activities. Every 3 years, we're required to do what's called an analysis for impediments, and that's a study that HUD requires we do to find out what the impediments are to building affordable housing and economic development activities within the community. One thing new we're doing this year is at the end of 2011, when our consolidated plan actually concludes, up to that point in time, we're trying to invite the municipal advisory councils to do what's called a revitalization plan. These funds will allow us to do a study to determine an eligible area within this MAC area where they can do economic activities, public service activities, and designate a certain area to bring it out of a blighted condition. The remainder of the funds are set aside based on poverty and population to the participating cities and the county unincorporated area. This is a breakout of those remaining funds. As mentioned, they're distributed based on poverty and population and the criteria related to CDBG. Under the Emergency Shelter Grant designation, it's broken up into 5 areas. 5% is eligible to be set aside for administration costs. 10% is set aside for operational costs related to a homeless facility itself. $37,000 is set aside for essential services, that's staffing for that a homeless facility. Almost $34,000 is set aside for homeless prevention. An example is homeless vouchers for rental or mortgage assistance to prevent families or individuals from becoming homeless. The remainder is set aside for renovation or rehabilitation for a homeless facility. The 10% I mentioned that's set aside, we have a public service review panel with representatives from the 5 cities, the CEO's office, Behavioral Health, and the Stanislaus Housing and Support Services Collaborative. And they, based on criteria set aside by HUD, determine recommendations for funding, which are presented here. They represent serving the youth, senior populations, homeless demographic populations, as well as special needs. Under the Emergency Shelter Grant, the same panel reviews recommendations based on the homeless population directly, and these are the 4 that were recommended for funding. CHSS, for instance, Community Housing and Shelter Services does homeless prevention vouchers. Guardian House serves the homeless youth, Redwood Family Center, single mothers with families and children. And Santa Fe Project is homeless families, and within 4 to 5 months, about 70% get reentered into the regular population with rental units. The new addition is the MAC Neighborhood Revitalization Strategies. The benefit of these strategies is it allows the MACs to have ability to represent a blighted area within their community, where they can be eligible from a federal standpoint to apply for funds related to job creation and retention, aggregation of housing units that are affordable for that area, as well as use of money for public benefit needs within that designated area. Issues to address with this money, we encourage up to 2 MACs a year through 2010, that will use this money to designate a boundary to serve and get out of that blighted condition. They have to address demographic criteria that's required by HUD. They'll probably use a consultant that we would go through an RFP process, and then that area would then be economically empowered to get jobs through technology training, things of that nature, and they have to meet certain performance measurements to do that. For the county and the corporate area itself, we began the first phase of the construction engineering design, actually the engineering design phase of the Empire Storm Drainage Infrastructure Project. We'll be continuing that through this next fiscal year, and that's the main main project related to infrastructure. I believe that's one more. And we have T3 training. We partner with the CEO's office, and we provide technology training to allow people to re-enter the workforce with technological skills. Encouraging news is we're now partnering with Newman and Oakdale. They are willing to submit some of their money, up to $10,000 each, to offer this training in that area in their community. With that money, they then get the skills necessary to enter the workforce, and it's pretty encouraging to see how it's expanding. Hopefully, we'll be able to get all five cities on over the next 3 years. And that's it. If there's any other questions.
Thank you, Ann. Is there any questions? Okay. Seeing no question, we need a motion for this. I need a motion.
So moved.
Okay. I need a second. Okay. I got a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. We'll go down to correspondence.
This board has received a letter from the California State Department of Transportation regarding their commitment to redirect funds from the Oakdale Bypass Project to the North County Corridor Project and their intent to commit interregional transportation improvement program funds in the 2010 State Transportation Improvement Program cycle for up to $91 million in capital money.
I recommend we refer this to the Department of Public Works.
This board has received a letter from the State Attorney General regarding a series of workshops to be held throughout the state this spring in conjunction with the Local Government Commission on the global warming issue.
I'm going to refer this to the Chief Executive Officer to take care of the global warming.
This board has received a letter from the State Fish and Game Commission giving notice of proposed regulatory action relating to mammal hunting regulations.
I'm going to refer this to the Department of Environmental Resources and the Fish and Wildlife Committee.
This board has received a letter from the Penny Saver Hart Hank Shopper, Inc. regarding their plans to reduce their workforce at different locations in California, including the site at 2005 Evergreen Avenue, Suite 8, Modesto, California, beginning on or about April 15, 2008, pursuant to the California Worker Adjustment and Retaining Notification Act.
I'm going to refer this to Alliance Work, WorkNet and the Sanislaus County Economic Development and Workforce Alliance. Jim?
This board has received a letter from the State Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation regarding the Public Safety and Offender Rehabilitation Services Act of 2007, a plan for prison and offender reentry reform.
I'm going to refer this to the Chief Executive Officer.
This board has received a letter from the State Fish and Game Commission giving notice of proposed regulatory action relating to the Central Valley Chinook salmon sport fishing.
I'm going to refer this to the Department of Environmental Resources and the Fish and Wildlife Committee.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
I acknowledge to see the claims referred to the Chief Executive Office Risk Management Division. Is there any board of supervisors reports?
Yeah. No, I have nothing this time. It's one of the very few times.
Okay. Legislative, fiscal, and management report from our Chief Executive Officer.
Yes, I just have two items this morning. First, I would like to indicate that county staff, department heads, and their staff continue to track the proposed state budget reductions. Nothing really definitive has come out, although there are many, many recommendations. We don't yet have a good handle on what the implications are to the delivery of services in Stanislaus County. Second, the Stanislaus Leadership Collaborative will be traveling next week to Washington, D.C. to meet with our federal representatives as well as federal agencies to discuss county priorities, most particularly Oristembia Creek. the Tuolumne River Regional Park and our local law enforcement interoperability.
We're adjourned.